Blog Talk Radio.
Doing? Oh my God! I feel like I haven't been here for a while. It's been a couple days. Wow. A little break was nice. Thank God. I hope everybody's well. If you're sick of COVID, too bad. Wear a mask. All right. So anyway, tonight, we have a great guest. He's a sculptor and artist, Tim Bruckner. He does all the DC characters and. Beautiful, beautiful artwork, and he's giving a piece away tonight. Depends on what we talk about. If you talk about a specific character, he may have it. So I'm going to say thank you to our sponsors. I'm going to play a song for you guys while I reach out to Tim, and we'll get him on the phone. I hope you guys are all doing well. Thank you to our sponsors, the Highborn Bistro in Barfield, New Jersey, Precious Memory Video in Kentonville, Pennsylvania, KWV Wines in South Africa, Tea to the Times and Other Stuff in Clifton, New Jersey, and Syntech Productions in Nopa Harbor, New Jersey, Take a Break from Cancer.org for Pete's Sake, The Observer Newspaper in Kearney, New Jersey, Joey Max Cafe in Harrison, New Jersey, and GenieBottles.com. So I'm going to give Tim a call, and while I call him, you guys can listen to a little music. I hope you don't mind me playing this. This is, we need to be kind people, okay? Hang on one moment. I'm going to get Tim. Be right back. Hang on.
But it's a place called
please, please, please be kind to one another. Let's love each other again. Anyway, sorry for the delay, guys. I thought that the song had played a lot more than that, or I wouldn't have left poor Tim on hold so long. On the phone with me now, artist, sculptor, Tim Bruckner. How are you, sir? Thank you for joining me.
I'm good. How about yourself?
Good, good, good. We finally get to talk. How are you?
I'm old and tired.
Old and tired. Join the club, right? Oh, my goodness. And where are you at again? You're in Wisconsin?
We're in Wisconsin, yeah. We're at the far end. We're closer to Minneapolis.
Wow. How's the weather?
Chilly. But
yeah.
Right, we had a lovely couple of days. It was like in the 50s today.
Yeah, it's getting a little chilly over here now lately. I just actually put the heat on. First time in, November? It's the first time I'm putting the heat on. So, well, let me talk to you, sir. It's after the craziness of our phone call last night, I apologize. I got on the air, and I said, oh, my God, it feels like I haven't been on in forever, and it was only a couple of days. So it's like, you know, when you don't do something every day, it's like, oh my God. So I have to ask you now, how did you become a sculptor for DC? Did you approach them? Did they approach you? And already have an in-house sculptor? I mean, how did they say, oh, I think we need a sculptor today?
I started off as a sculptor for a jewelry store in Beverly Hills.
Oh.
And I was 17 and worked for Max Factor, did some stuff for Max Factor,
really?
Did some private commissions. And then I had worked for Toy Biz for a little bit. And Toy Biz, DC Salmon, I worked for Toy Biz and offered me a job, and I jumped.
Nice. Now, when you were doing Toy Biz, were they rubber, glass? I mean, what do you use?
It was action figures.
Action figures.
When I first started off with Toy Biz, we were doing two-ups. So a 6-inch figure would be a 12-inch figure.
Mm.
And then over the course of about a year, we decided to do one-to-ones. So 6-inch figures were sculpted as 6-inch figures. And then I did a bunch of those. I did, for some reason, Toy Biz had a license to wrestling. We did a bunch of wrestlers and then some comic book stuff, and then DC picked me up, and I went and interviewed in New York and walked out with a job. And I was there from 1999 to 2017.
Wow. Now, you don't actually create the characters, do you? And then they do the comic book around it, or is it vice versa?
No. Mostly what we'll do is that there'll be sales of a certain comic book will generate a action figure or a statue. And so the artists involved will create a bunch of designs, and they will use those designs to make the action figures or the statues.
Mm. Mm. Now, when you were doing the action figures for Toy Biz, they were also action figure statues as well?
Well, we did some statues, but primarily Toy Biz in those days was action figures.
So what's that,
like
rubber,
said,
plastic?
Two-ups, and then we went to one-to-one.
Okay. And is it rubber or plastic, the action figures?
Well, they were all injection-molded vinyl.
Okay.
It's extremely a very forgiving material, but you still have to follow certain parameters that the material can only do so much stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to understand what the material can do, what it can't do, and create figures that will be reproducible.
Right. And now the pieces you do for DC, they look like glass. What type of material is that?
Well, if it's a DC statue, it's produced in polyester resin.
Mm.
And the resin cast in China generally has got a calcium filler in it, unless it's going to be clear resin, and then we do that. But most of the stuff I did for DC, I did a lot of action figures, but I did a fair amount of statues as well.
Hmm.
So we were able to bounce back and forth. It was very, very rewarding.
Nice. Oh, God, this happens to me all the time. I've got 5 questions to ask you, and I got to write them down. I say it every show. I need to write these questions. They're all in my head. So how many do you have personally in your house that you've created?
Oh, well, you know, the beauty of working with DC is that in the early days, like the first 4 or 5 years, they would send you 10 examples of the product that you would be able to create. And then for some reason it shifted to 4. So I've got a barn full of action figures and statues based on those days.
Nice. Now, I'm going to
ask you,
did you go to school or you're just a natural artist and you stepped in shoes
working
for DC?
The guy that lived across the street from us in a small community in California, Gardena, he owned a jewelry store in Beverly Hills.
Nice.
And I was heavily into the Renaissance, and I was working on a clay button that Pope Julius X might have worn. Mm. And I asked him to come over and look at it, and he looked at it, and he said, "You want a job?" I said, "Yeah."
Mm.
And the commute from Gardena to Beverly Hills was about an hour. But it was that's where I learned to sculpt in wax, and that was the best education I ever got in my life.
Wow. And what did you make out of jewelry? I mean, what did you, when you went to
jewelry
store?
Well, you know, it was a Beverly Hills jewelry store, so people came in with specific desires. I want a ring, I want a pendant, I want something with my kids on it, whatever it is. And we would discuss what they wanted, and then I would go ahead and sculpt it. They would cast it into silver or gold and finish it, and they would come and pick it up.
Wow. So you had no formal training. You're just a natural born talented artist.
Well, you know, yes, I would assume that's kind of true. But, you know, when I came up, all you had to do was be able to say yes.
Right.
And then you had to come up with whatever it is that they came up with. You know, I did stuff for DC. I did stuff for Toy Biz. I did stuff for a special effects company. I did some album covers. I did some recording. And every opportunity, I just said yes and then tried to figure out if it was something I could do. And lucky enough, I could do it.
Right.
These days, it's all about specialization. And, you know, you have to have a certain kind of expertise
to
get yourself in.
Right.
And, you know, there are some extremely talented people who are just not going to be as focused as is necessary, and they just won't get the job.
Mm. Now, I wanted to ask you, how old were you when you made your first piece, and what material did you use? Like, when did you know you had this talent?
I was 17 when I started working at the jewelry store.
Right, right.
And I sculpted it in wax, and they would cast it in gold or silver. And then I went freelance. I worked for a company, did some Zodiac symbols, and eventually went to Max Factor and did some things that would become glass perfume bottles. And that's when you start to understand that everybody wants something different. All you have to be able to do is understand what they want and give it to them.
Right, right. In your younger age, did you, as a kid, when you were bored, sculpt things? Did you carve things? I mean,
When I was a kid, I could not imagine not working for Disney. I thought that's what I want to do. And I used to do, when I was probably 10 or 11, 12, somewhere, and I used to do a draw animation.
Yeah.
And thought that's exactly it, what I want to do. And I sent a resume into Disney probably when I was 16 or 17. And of course, I got no answer because who wants to deal with a 16 or 17 year old? But, you know, it's always been my desire to do something creative, something to envision something, create something, and then make other people aware of where it is. And that's been my whole life. You know, it was from action figures to statues. It's always been able to interpret a popular figure and then have people relate to it.
Right.
One of the first conventions I ever went to was a Comic-Con in San Diego.
Mm.
And I was behind the desk, behind one of the display cabinets in the DC booth. And I saw this woman and man walking up, and she's pointing to all kinds of stuff, and he's nodding. And they come up, and then he starts pointing to all the stuff in the cabinet I'm standing in front of. And everything he's pointing to is stuff I had made. And she says he owns all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then they told me how much they spent on it, and I was flabbergasted. And from that point on, seriously, at the very beginning of my career, I understood that I wasn't working for an art director. I wasn't working for a company. I was working for the people that spent money on my stuff.
Right.
It made the biggest impact on my life that I was able to try and satisfy what collectors were looking for because
right.
I understood what it meant to them.
Right.
And it means a great deal. You know, when you're working a 9-to-5 and you're not pulling in a bunch of dough, and you're spending $1,500 a month on stuff I made, I'm there for you.
Right, right. What is the biggest piece or character you've ever done?
Well, you know, all the stuff that I do is relatively small. For a while though, I worked for a special effects company. There was a movie called Joe Panther, and they needed an alligator suit that a stuntman could wear because the producers came to us and said, well, the alligator is going to fight a dog.
Hmm.
We can either replace the dog or we can pay for a suit. And we thought it'd be cheaper to pay for the suit. So we made the alligator suit and some producers saw it and they decided they needed an alligator suit for a movie called Alligator. And it was me and five other sculptors. We produced a 24-foot long alligator suit.
Oh, wow.
That was going to be operated by a pair of Korean twins. The one guy was going to run the front feet and the mouth, and the back guy was going to run the back feet and the tail. We finished it, and it went into storage for a couple of years. By the time it came out, all the guts, all the foam rubber had disintegrated.
Hmm.
So if you see the movie these days, Alligator's the movie. If you see the movie these days, you'll see the head into a scene, and actors will throw themselves into the jaw. And then you'll see somebody whipped around in a tail. The jaw was driven in on the front of a Volkswagen, and we don't know how the tail worked. But it was just interesting. Naively, I went to the showing of the movie, and I thought, well, my name will be up there. And we didn't even get a mention on the company that built it. So,
oh, wow. Huh.
There you go.
Wow.
But it was, you know, it was at the same time that we were doing the 24-foot alligator, Dino De Laurentiis was doing his version of King Kong. And they built a full-size King Kong using urethane elastomer as the skin for that full-size Kong. And we used it because it was made sense, and we did that skin in the alligator.
Hmm. I wanted to ask you something. What is your pride and joy, your most favorite piece that you have, you cherish forever?
You know, I don't have one. I have.
I'm sure you don't have one, but there's got to be something that you
will never part with.
The stuff that you
do personally has to have a greater impact because you're not going to get any dough from it. You're just going to make it because you love to make it.
Right.
Years ago, Graham Nash commissioned me to do a sculpture based on a photograph by W. Eugene Smith called Tomoko and Bath. It was, he took a series of pictures of the results of a communal lake that was dumped, that radioactive stuff was dumped into. And the result was that babies were being born severely deformed.
Mm.
And he took a picture of a Japanese woman and her tragically deformed young girl called Tomoko and Bath. And Nash asked me to sculpt it. And it was the first time that I really had to think about what I was doing beyond what I liked to what somebody else might see in this piece. Because
mm-hmm.
the photograph was so well known and so jarring that I had to make sure that sculpturally it did the same thing. And we cast, I think we did four or five bronzes, and I think Nash's friends got them, and I had a couple. But it changed the way I looked at what I did. Because it's not enough to do what you want, but you have to think about how it impacts people who see it.
Right, right.
And sculpture is one of those things that impacts people almost non-existent. You can be impacted by an illustration. You can be impacted by a photograph because they're always around you all the time.
Mm.
It's very rare that you see sculpture, and it's very rare that you see sculpture that moves you. And that kind of was my job, to make sure that somehow I touched something in you, and we talked the same language.
Right, speaking to each other. Right.
Yes.
Now, I'm a little confused. Help me with this. Now, are you creating the mold and then it's coming out, or are you actually sculpting?
Well, pretty much everything I sculpt, I sculpt in wax.
Okay, so you are actually sculpting.
A wax formula that I kind of gleaned off of some Renaissance stuff, but basically it's a wax formula. I sculpt it in wax. I'll make a silicone mold, and then I'll cast a resin, and then I'll finish the resin to look like whatever I need, whether it's bronze or painted or whatever it is.
Right.
But I like the ability to make sure that whatever I reproduced is faithful to the thing that I made.
Right.
And sometimes if you sculpt something and you have it reproduced, the process isn't always faithful. And I've been around long enough to be able to see that, and I didn't want anybody who was interested in my work to be able to deal with the sacrifice. So anything I gave them was something I saw from beginning to end, and they were confident that I was confident to give them what I felt was real.
And I would gather each piece is a one of a kind. I mean, because they're each individually painted and everything, right?
Oh yes. A mold will only last you so long, but I think. You know, I've got stuff on my Facebook page and other stuff that everything that is mine, well, maybe I'll do 4 or 5 maximum. And the cast, hand cast, had finished, had painted. You know, casting is the process of putting resin, 2-part resin, into a mold and making sure that it's reproduced. There's always mistakes in the casting, no matter what. So you make compensations, and you make sure that whatever comes out is what you intend. And that's what has driven me, my career, is to make sure that anything that anybody gets from me is faithful to what I am comfortable giving them.
Right.
And, you know, I've been around long enough to know that dough is dough. You know, lots of people book really, really hard for not very much. And so if you're going to spend that stuff on my stuff, I'm going to make sure you get your money's worth.
Right. How are you, I don't know if you're into this or not, but how are you digging 3D printers right now? Do you have one? Have you used one?
No, I'm not a big fan. And I'll tell you why. When hand sculpting was what there was, you had the ability to impart a certain character to it, a certain life to it.
Right.
And detail.
No, it was art. Yeah, it's art.
Detail was what you were able to invest in the piece.
Right.
And as digital came in, you could get a tremendous amount of detail, but there was no life.
Nice.
And I think it's very, very rare these days that you find a digital artist who is as concerned about imparting life to the piece as of putting in detail.
Mm-hmm.
There are digital artists who will do it who are extremely good, and there are digital artists who are more computer artists who aren't necessarily interested in making that connection between the thing I'm making and you breathing and
right.
heart beating.
Hmm. Well, you're right. The feeling's not behind it. You could feel that. You could see that it's not there. It's just manufactured, you know?
Well, and you know, it used to be... making action figures was a major financial investment. When I worked for Toy Biz and worked for DC, when they committed to an action figure, it was a major investment. And because, you know, you had to sculpt it, you had to mold, you had to cast it, you had to paint it, you had to present them with the paint master. It was a big commitment, not counting the art director and all the other stuff. And these days, I think it's cheaper, and I don't know this for a fact, but I will say that I believe it's cheaper to work digitally all the way along the line until you actually have to print it out, and then you have to cast it, and then you have to paint it. So there is some investment. There's a minor investment in digital than there is in hand sculpting, but I don't know that to be true. It's my impression.
Right.
I personally just feel more in tune with something that is hand sculpted than I do with something that is digitally sculpted.
Right.
And maybe
right.
that's just me because I'm old.
Well, no, because you're an artist and, you know, you put your heart behind your work and it shows in the work.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was going to ask you, oh, God, I hate when this happens to me. I got to write questions. Tim, I'm sorry. I don't write questions down. It's just me and you talking, you know what I mean? And it's in my head. I know what I want to talk to you about. How long does it take you to do one of your normal pieces? What are they, like 6 inches? How tall are they?
An action figure is generally going to be around 6 inches. 7 tops, but 6 by 6 inches. All action figures are jointed. There's the shoulder, there's the elbow, there's the hip, there's the knee, sometimes the head. And it can probably take a week.
Connected to the leg bone.
But, you know, when I was working for DC, Toy Biz came up with a figure that had 22 points of articulation, which was massive.
Oh, God.
And DC's articulation was probably about 9 points, maybe.
Mm.
So we decided we would do a 22-point articulation. We did, and it looked like crap, and we never did another one.
Mm. What character was it?
Superman.
It was Superman.
It's just, you know, every time you articulate, you challenge its mobility, and you challenge its stylistic integrity. So if you articulate the shoulders, the elbows, the wrists, the hips, the knees, the ankles, the head, all those compromise the structure of the piece, and then you're left with what you got.
Right. Wow. And so, but how long does one take, your average one, 6 inches?
I think an average action figure would take about a week. A statue could take about a month. You know, it depends on what it is. I did the Superman Wonder Woman kiss statue. That took a while because, and also the Batman Catwoman kiss statue, because we had to make compromises in how it could be constructed. They could not actually kiss. They could approach a kiss, but they couldn't actually lip lock because of the way that it was manufactured. So we had to make accommodations based on manufacturing, but you know, the main thing is to make sure that it looked like they wanted to and looked like they could, and we did okay with that.
Well, I don't know if this has been done or if this is an idea for you, but I'm sure you've got a lot of people who collect from you. Would you ever consider, or has it been done, putting someone, just an average Joe's face on an action figure, like a Superman figure, but with maybe your face on it? Has that been done, or people ask you to do that?
Well, you know, it's not really. I think because of the nature of how action figures are made, there's not much room for personalization. It's more likely that you could personalize a statue, but I think collectors who do collect action figures or statues are more interested in the character that they collect rather than themselves.
Mm.
So you'll see collectors who collect exclusively Superman, or collect a certain artist who draws Superman or Batman. They're involved in a specific kind of character, and they will collect. I've seen collections of a couple of thousand pieces of one particular character over every manufacturer. It's mind-boggling, but that's what they get off on, and God love them.
Right. Oh, okay. So now that you said that, you opened up a question for me that I didn't have on my mind. Let's say one action figure, Superman. How many different versions of it have you done, and what was the difference? Is it just a different movement, different color?
I've done dozens and dozens of Superman, but it's always, generally, always based on an illustrator style.
Hmm.
I've been able to do several Superman that were my own design. Hmm. I did a line for DC called DC Dynamics. And those were all my designs, and I've been able to design certain action figures and certain statues. But generally, you know, it'll be a Jim Lee or another artist whose work is fan-driven, and a fan will want a 3D interpretation of that.
Hmm.
So it's, you know, it's one of the things that I think is interesting is that Superman and Batman are always portrayed as being pissed off.
Hmm.
I think it would be great to be able to see Superman smile or Batman have a fun time, because if they're representational of people, people are that.
Right.
They're not just always pissed off and angry and crime fighting. Even crime fighters have a good time. It'd be nice to see them do that.
Right. They're always tough with the square jaw, tough face, serious face. You're right. You're right. I didn't even think of that. And that, you know what? I never even realized that. You're absolutely right.
Well, so, it would be, you know, we there are collectors who see them as extensions of ourselves.
Hmm.
And if they're extensions of ourselves, they experience the same emotions and the same societies that we do. And we have a good time every now and again, and they should too. But you've never, ever seen a Superman laughing or smiling or a Batman having a good time. It's just they're always so dour and serious.
Mm. Have you ever done any artwork for actual comics or just the sculpting, the figures?
Everything I've done in terms of action figures and statues, DC or Toy Biz, is based on a character from a comic book.
No, I know, but have you done the actual drawings in the comic book? Have you been
illustrating
in the Wonder
Book?
Well,
I've designed pieces for statues based on existing characters, but I've never done anything that appeared in a comic book.
Mm. Well, now that I'm on the line of that. How did you stumble on album cover designs, which is a lost art?
I was working for that jewelry store.
Yeah.
And the owner of the jewelry store was a big game hunter. And before that I had been painting things on hen's eggs. In fact, one of the things that I painted was for Ray Charles' album. I painted a portrait of him on a hen's egg. So I'd done that, and he came up with some ostrich eggs, which was amazing. So I painted a couple of those, and he wanted me to paint a portrait that he had done, a portrait that he'd taken of himself with a kill that he did of a lion and his gun.
Mm.
So I painted his portrait on the hen's egg, on the ostrich egg. And his wife came back to me and said, "Well, I think it makes him look old. Can you redo it? And I said, "Well, I can't because I painted it in this gouache, which is a opaque watercolor, so I'd have to figure out a way to do it." So I took it home and asked for a couple of days off to figure it out. And then 2 days later, I got a call and said, "You are fired." Okay. So I need something to do. So I picked up the Yellow Pages and I looked for album cover design companies.
Hmm.
And the first company I called didn't answer. The second company I called was Camouflage Productions. They said, "Yeah, come in, bring your portfolio." I didn't have a portfolio. All I had was crap on the wall, so I brought that stuff, drove up in the afternoon, showed my work, and about 3 hours later, I came home with the Ringo album cover job. And the guy said, "Do you have a passport?" I said, "Do I have a passport?"
Right.
He said, "You're going to need one because you're going to England."
Wow.
And 4 or 5 days later, I was on a plane to England. I spent 4 or 5 days in England. I went to the Apple offices. I showed Ringo the cover that I was working on. I showed Richard Perry, who is Ringo's producer, the cover I was working on.
Mm-hmm.
They gave me authorization. I went back, finished it, painted it, and that was it. And from that, I got a couple of other. I was able to design the logo for Average White Band.
Oh, wow.
I did a Ray Charles cover. I did the dust jacket for Cat Stevens. I was able to parlay that into something. And in those days, you were smart enough to focus on a particular discipline. And I could have, but I didn't.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, I've done album covers, now I want to do something else. And so from after that, I worked on a live-action animation pilot for a film for Harry Nilsson and Ringo Starr.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just another series of evolutions. You know, you bump into one thing, it leads you to something else. And that's what I've done my entire life.
Wow. Well, it definitely sounds like you've had an exciting life, that's for sure. A cool life, I should say. You know, not a 9-to-5 gig. It's, you know, you didn't have to wear a suit and tie.
Oh,
and,
good God, no.
Right.
But, you know, I think one of the beauties of when I came up was that all things were possible. All you had to be able to do is say yes and do the job.
Right.
And these days, there's so much more between you and it that I think it has severely limited the talent in any of the disciplines, because people who would naturally be really, really good will never get the opportunity.
Right, right. And you know what? I don't know about you, but I'm like the same way. I mean, I'll try anything once. And I'm not going to say I can't do something if I don't try it, you know? And you're not a failure if you try. I think you're a failure if you don't try. That's just my opinion anyway.
Well, I think there's a lot to that. I think that all you have to do is be able to deliver, and your expectation is different than theirs. I mean,
right.
Early on, I did some prosthetic pieces for a company in North Hollywood that was doing a space movie, and
yeah.
I did a mask and a couple of noses and some lips and stuff. And early on, when I was a kid, I used to do a lot. When I was a kid, I wanted to be Lon Chaney. I thought that would be the best goddamn job you could possibly get.
Yeah.
So I knew how to do molds and latex castings and stuff. And so I was
right.
able to do it. And I pulled it off. And, you know, but these days, in order to be able to pull that off, you've got to have years of experience and be an expert. And
right.
those days are long, long behind us.
Right. I know. It's well, you definitely had a great time. What are you doing now, Tim? What are you working on now?
I just finished a Dickens bust, a bust of Charles Dickens.
Oh, cool.
I've always been a huge fan of Dickens. I've read almost everything he's written. I recently read a biography, and it turns out he was kind of a dick, but, you know, he was always a good writer.
Right.
So I did a bust of him. Right now, I'm doing a miniature piece of Salvador Dali.
Oh, wow.
But it's interesting that when the deadline stopped, I wasn't sure what to do with my time.
Right.
And I thought, well, do what you like. And I found out that there's not a whole lot that I would like to invest my time in. So I'm exploring. All I'm doing is just trying to see what's out there and see what I like to do and spend my time doing.
Nice. And you obviously have a fan base that reaches out to you and places orders or requests things from you, or no?
Well, you know, I'm aware that I have a fan base.
Yeah.
I really am not aware of who they are, where they are, what they like. And most of my fan base is based on the work that I've done for the companies that I've worked.
Right.
So
right.
There'll be people who like my work who are Toy Biz fans. There are people who like my DC work, and it translates based on the pieces that they enjoy. But I really, you know, I'm not aware of it, and I'm glad I'm not. I'm always extremely grateful for people who will contact me saying, I'm a big fan of your work, and we want this, and we like that. But I like feeling anonymous. I like not having the pressure of having to be that thing.
Right.
And that makes it easier on me because, I have really no personal expectations of just waking up and breathing.
Right. I know. Now, the kids must love coming over by you. Do you have a lot of kids come by and check out your stuff in the barn and all that? Or?
Not, you know, I have a couple of kids, and their friends know who I am.
Hmm.
I live in Wisconsin, in a very small town in the middle of nowhere.
Hmm.
And we've had a couple of people come in from Chicago, and we've had a couple of people come in from Seattle, and a couple of people come in from Minneapolis. But often, by the time they figure out who I am and what I've done, they've kind of put me in a place where they don't think they can get to me. And I find that ironic because I've done the same thing. When I was growing up, I was big fans of people I thought I'd never, ever get close to.
Right.
So I think there's a certain distance that celebrity creates that people feel uninclined to pursue.
Right. Hmm. Now, you said you have kids as well. Are they into sculpting? Are they artistic? What do they do?
My daughter is extremely talented, but she doesn't quite know how good she is, so she's doing something else. She's a dental anesthetician.
Mm.
And my son is works for a touring company. They're both very talented, both very smart, and happy. And that's all I care about. All I really want them to be is happy. Do whatever you want to do.
Right.
But be happy, because that's extremely rare these days, that your happiness is compromised by so many things, that if you can find a place in your heart, in your life, to be happy, follow it, lock onto it, and pursue it.
Right, right. Have you ever thought of turning the barn into somewhat of a, not museum, but a viewing place where people could come and actually see all your work? Or
not really. It's work I've done, and I don't really have a great passion for it anymore. Anybody who wants to come by, they're welcome to call, and I'll set up a time for them to look at the stuff. But generally, I mean, my stuff has been out of print for so long that if you like it, you probably got it, and if you can't get it, you're having a hard time finding it.
Mm-hmm.
I did a statue of Superman and Wonder Woman kissing, called the Kiss Statue.
Mm-hmm.
And I forget
that's
what it retailed for. It might have retailed it probably.
I'd love to see that. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Problem. I think it retailed initially when it issued like for $285 or something. I don't know. I looked at it the other day on Amazon. It's $1,500.
Wow.
That's insane.
Yeah.
But that's where it is. And then partly where it is because there's so very few of them around. Anybody who was into it got it when it first came out. So
right. Well, it sounds like a very interesting piece too. I mean, Wonder Woman and Superman kissing. As I said, it's cool.
We got this. I'm not sure about this, but I'm going to suppose that I think Jim Lee is the one that designed it initially.
Hmm.
But you know, they give you a couple of turnarounds, but they don't give you the intimacy. They can't draw the intimacy, and you have to be able to find a way to relate that. And so there's a way to how they touch each other. I look at each other, and you've got to remember your own experiences and how that played out. And so those kinds of things become very, very personal, because it's an example of what your relationship with that experience is like.
Mm.
And hopefully you touch a nerve with people who experienced it too.
Right, right. So you think, based on what you just said, do you think most of the people who collect are portraying themselves in the statue?
I honestly don't know. I think that there are people who collect Superman because they like the character who is Superman.
Mm.
I think there are people who collect Wonder Woman because they like who she is. And there's also people who collect them because they feel connected to them.
Right.
I don't interact enough with them to know how they feel about them. I think it would be great to be able to, I haven't been to a convention in 20 years.
Mm.
And I think it would be cool to actually go now and just be able to talk to people about what they see, what they like, and how they relate. Because I'm no doubt that their experience with the characters is much different than mine.
Right, right.
And it would be interesting to know why it resonates with them so much.
Are you a collector as well? And if yes, what do you collect?
I collect Santa Clauses.
Ah.
I got my first one when I was like 7.
Mm.
And I think I probably, by these days, I probably got 385 of them. But I just find it interesting the way that he is depicted and how he's exploited. I just find the character incredibly interesting, just for me personally.
Mm.
You know, it's a character designed to be all giving and loving, but we all find a way to personalize it. And so, you know, I think Norman Rockwell down to St. Nicholas, we've all got a version of him.
Right. That's what I was gonna say. I mean, it's Santa Claus, but there are so many different versions of Santa Claus. You know, be it the face, oh crap! Sorry, guys, hang on. We have a problem. I don't know if you can hear me.
I
just got disconnected
here.
Hang on 1 second. You there?
Okay.
You there, Tim?
Yep. You there?
Oh, yes. I'm sorry. My board just hit the floor.
No problem.
I was going to say, you know, that everybody knows what Santa looks like, but there's so many different clothing, the versions of his clothing. His face is sometimes his face is fatter than others, or fuller than others, I should say, not fatter. The beard is longer, and always a happy face, but sometimes serious, too.
Yep. You know, every once in a while it'd be nice to see Santa pissed off.
Yeah, right.
or Superman, you know, smiling. I mean, it's just that we've pigeonholed these characters into a certain identity, and if we consider that they are extensions of people, they have a lot of different emotions.
Right. Wow. What would be your dream piece to make?
Oh, I honestly don't know. I think it would be to be able to collaborate with somebody who I really feel strongly is I honestly don't know. I want to be able to do something I don't think I can. I mean, the challenge of working on all that stuff was there were pieces that I were given that I didn't think I could pull off. And those were the most interesting because you're faced with your own limitations and how do you deal with it? And you find a way to do it. I mean, you can't say no. So that's the challenge to me is being able to approach something that looks impossible and then make it happen.
Right. Wow. Wow. Well, Tim, can people purchase anything? And if they can, where can they purchase? Or how can anybody get in touch and find out more about you? And
well, you know, literally the last thing I did for DC was 2017. And everything of those days is sold in some way or form or another. And I think most of it you can probably find on Amazon or just if you like a piece, Google it, you'll be able to find a place for it. Most of the stuff at some point is available either at Amazon or eBay or something.
You don't have a website?
I don't, no. And I used to, but I had my website operated on something called Flash Player. And that's no longer a program that works, so I don't have one anymore.
Oh,
I have
you
a
know
Facebook
what?
Page, and people can look at me on Facebook and communicate that way.
Now, I also wanted to ask you, you have a few books out too, don't you?
Well, I have a couple of novels out, but I was lucky enough to collaborate with a couple of great people in a book called Pop Sculpture. And Pop Sculpture was a book about how you go about doing what I do without having to do what I do. So we talk about interpreting design, about working in wax, about molding, about casting, about painting. I think it's about 4 or 5 years old. I think it's still available. But I think it's a really legitimate way to approach what I do and how to do it.
Yeah.
Because I think it helps demystify some of the process and gives you practical solutions to things that may be difficult for you.
Right. What? Any advice for any kids out there right now who are very talented, don't have a pot to piss in, can't go to school for art or anything? Any advice for these kids, what they can do with their talent?
Don't give up. I mean,
absolutely.
Just because there's going to be more people to tell you that you can't than tell you can.
Absolutely.
You're going to have to do what you do, mostly research the technique of what you want to do. If you want to sculpt a certain thing in a certain material, do that thing. It may be incredibly difficult to overcome it. But the main thing is to pursue what you want to pursue. Never give up. Never let anybody tell you you can't do it, because you may be at a point where it looks like you can't, and then the next time it looks like you're doing gangbusters.
Right.
But never give up. Believe in yourself and your ability to take care of what you need to take care of. And also do the research to figure out where you fit in. And if you don't fit in anywhere, it doesn't mean anything. It just means that there's no market for you, but doesn't mean that you can't make it.
Right. I have another.
There are a couple of There are a couple of people, a couple of sculptor couples that I know that are extremely talented who have found the only way to make it happen is if they do it for themselves.
Right.
And that's
yeah,
the main
you're
thing.
Right.
I mean,
because it's not going to come to you.
It won't. It won't. But, you know, it can be extraordinarily demoralizing to keep pounding out and pounding out and not get the results you want. But that doesn't mean that you can't do it. It just means that somebody can't see you not doing it.
Right. And
you got to have faith in yourself and believe in that you can
right.
and work your ass off.
Right. Anything in the arts or talent or in this industry, if you got to have thick skin because, like Tim said, that you're going to hear more no's than yeses. And,
oh, absolutely.
And you
absolutely.
Can't let
I
it
mean,
stop
and,
you. You just got to keep pushing.
And in particular, in any of the art forms, in music, in sculpture,
yeah.
in illustration, there's always going to be somebody who's going to say, you're not good enough. And if you believe it, you might as well quit now.
Right.
But the
right.
main thing is to be able to have faith in yourself and work it through, and eventually you'll find the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And the truth, as they say, will set you free.
Mm-hmm. That's right. That's right. I did want to ask you this. I just thought of it, too. When you were growing up, what was your favorite character in the comic books?
I never grew up with comic books. I mean, when I was a kid, there was a magazine called Famous Monsters, and I read that religiously because I wanted to be a makeup artist.
Oh.
And my hero was Lon Chaney, and I thought, if he can do it, I can do it.
Yeah.
And the editor of the magazine, Forrest Ackerman, lived in Hollywood Hills when I lived in Los Angeles, and I went up to his place and had a long afternoon with him and thought, I can do this. And then I realized, not really. But when I walked into his living room, on his drawing board, on the board, he had an illustration of one of my favorite all-time illustrators. And I thought, good God. I mean, if he got it, I can get it. And so, you know, reality that flips into that between desire and accomplishment.
Right.
I wanted to do it, and I kind of actually understood that I was never going to be able to do it.
Right.
And that's also one of the things that young artists should realize, that there are desires and there's reality,
mm-hmm.
and you have to have a really clear view of what reality mm-hmm. will be in order for you to make it.
Right. Well, it sounds like you've been doing it a long time, and it's been your career, and you never had to worry about where work was coming from, which is great. And you know what? When you're talented, that's what happens. I mean, I'm sure it wasn't always peaches and cream, you know. But
you know what I mean. You know, there are points when you don't really have a choice.
Right.
What else are you going to do?
Right.
You know, you can go work at the market or you can go draw something. I mean, for a while there, I had a really lovely experience working as an illustrator for magazines in California. And illustrating a story was challenging because you read the thing and then you had to find a way to make it visual so that it related to what you were reading. And, you know, all those experiences are only opens you up and makes you more credible with everything you try.
Right. Well, I wasn't a big comic book reader. I mean, the only thing we did, Archie. Archie was the one we had. But my brothers had the action ones, the, you know, DC and Marvel and those. And
yep.
my favorite character from them, not that I read them, but based on the drawings and everything, was Aquaman.
Oh, yeah.
He's my favorite.
I did a couple of him. I did, two or three action figures and a couple of statues based on Aquaman.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I thought I loved the outfit. I thought he had such a great body in it. And then when the cartoon was out, I liked the cartoon, but, you know.
Well, you know, we all grow up with what we grew up with. So
Exactly.
It's always something.
Right. Well, Tim, oh, my God, thank you so much. It was great chatting with you. And
my pleasure.
Oh, no, it was mine. Thank you. And I wish you all the best. I hope we stay in touch. And it was a pleasure speaking with you. And I'll let everybody know where they can get your stuff if they're interested. I mean, I know they already have, like you said, if they want it, they have it. And if they need it, they
know
where to get
Facebook, it. And they can contact me on Facebook if they like.
Got it. I will let them know.
Well, thank you so much for the opportunity. It was a great pleasure to talk with you.
No, thank you, Tim. It was a pleasure as well. Thank you so much. You take care. If I don't speak to you, have a happy Thanksgiving. Be safe, stay well, and be healthy.
You do the same.
All right, take care.
Thank
All
you.
Right, everybody. Mr. Tim Bruckner. Oh, what a nice guy. I'm telling you, I love talking to everybody. I mean, I must be weird. What's wrong with me that I just like to talk to people? What is wrong with me? Do people think I'm lonely or something? I don't know. But anyway, we've got a great rest of the month for you guys. What do we got coming up? Oh, the 22nd we're going to have, believe it or not, Rick Ryan's coming back again. I love Rick. He's a great guy. He's a wonderful.
An amazing guy. Good friend and extraordinarily talented.
Oh, I know. He's an amazing songwriter. So we're going to have Rick and Buffy Ford Stewart on. We're doing this for JFK, the 22nd is the day that JFK was assassinated. We have a song that we're going to play, and for JFK, and Buffy knew RFK very well, I believe, and her husband, John Stewart, if you don't know who that is, famous musician, songwriter. And we're going to talk about them. And on the 24th, actor Hank Garrett. And we are having back, who I screwed up 2 weeks ago, Mr. Anson Williams from Happy Days.
Wow.
And on the 25th, we have Coco Dolan's on. And the 27th, we're going to meet Mr. Steve Cannon. He's a DJ. He's got a great show out there where he does old movies for you guys. And he's the self-proclaimed king of trivia. And and we are going to introduce him. And probably the second half hour, we'll do a trivia show. And we'll be giving away some prizes. Who knows? Maybe Mr. Bruckner will donate a prize. I don't know.
You never know.
And we're going to maybe do that once a month with Steve. We're going to do a trivia night, the King of Trivia night, and give away some prizes. And then again, on the 9th, Buffy Stewart's going to come back with us, and we're going to discuss her life with the monkey. So, like I said, November's a little bit of the monkey month, and then December's shaping up pretty good. So we'll be going there. So, Tim, thank you so much. It was a pleasure. Let me say thank you.
My pleasure, seriously.
Yes, you too. You take care. We'll talk soon.
All right, take care.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
So I want to say thank you to our sponsors, the Hive Bar and Bistro in Garfield, New Jersey, Precious Memory Video in Kittnersville, Pennsylvania, KWV Wines in South Africa, Tees for the Times and Other Stuff in Clifton, New Jersey. Their T-shirts are available on applauseradioshow.com, by the way. Syntech Productions in Lenoka Harbor, New Jersey. Take a Break from Cancer.org for Pete's sake. The Observer Newspaper in Kearney, New Jersey. Joey Mac Cafe in Harrison, New Jersey. And GenieBottles.com. Guys, if you are a retro or love nostalgia, you know Christmas is right around the corner. If you can, get yourself a Genie bottle from I Dream of Genie. Mario Della Casa, he does some fantastic work. He's a great artist, and the bottles are beautiful. Excuse me. And, oh, God, what was I just going to – I hate that. I'm so sorry, guys. I got to stop that. You guys probably hate that. And I don't know what the hell I want to say next. I don't even remember now. Anyway, it is Wednesday. Have a great weekend. Thank you so much for listening, and we will talk to you all soon. Here, have a great weekend. Take care. Bye-bye.